So we'd like to speak a little bit about Srila Sanatana Goswami. And before we speak, I'd like to read a poem that was written about Sanatana Goswami by Raghunath Das Goswami. So it goes as follows in Sanskrit, and then I'll read the English. Vairagya yug bhakti rasam prayatnair apayayanmam anabhipsumandam kripambhuriryā paradukkatukhe sanatarastham prabhum ashrayambhe. Raghunath Das Goswami says, this is from his Vilapakus Manjali, I was unwilling to drink the nectar of devotional service possessed of renunciation, but Sanatana Goswami, out of his causeless mercy, made me drink it, even though I was unable to do so. Therefore, he is an ocean of mercy. He is very much compassionate to fallen souls like me, and thus it is my duty to offer my respectful obeisances unto his lotus feet and take shelter of him. So, as far as Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, the other Goswamis are concerned, they're all Nitya Siddha associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That means they're eternally liberated souls. And according to the Gaura Ganadesh Dipika, written by Kavi Karnapur, Sanatana Goswami was Rati Manjari, or sometimes it's described as Lavanga Manjari, in Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. So, what a manjari is, I think I should describe to you what a manjari is. A manjari is a small prepubescent girl. I mean, a girl who has not yet reached maturity. And the manjaris, or the manjari gopis, they assist Radha and Krishna in very, very intimate ways, more intimate, in fact, than the sakis assist them, because they're allowed entrance into the pastimes of Radha and Krishna when they're having an intimate association, because they're innocent, young, very young girls. So the Goswamis of Vrindavan were generally manjari gopis in their, what we call, ontological position, their original position. So Sanatana Goswami was born in a family, called Saraswata Brahmin family, in Bengal. And he had two brothers who were also good devotees. That was Rupa Goswami and Anupama. But Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami were forced into government service. They had to serve the Mughals. Now, there's a distinction between Muslims and Mughals. It's very important we understand that distinction. The Mughals are descendants of the people who came from the north and were related with Genghis Khan. Anyone's heard of Genghis Khan before? You call him Genghis Khan. We call him Genghis. You know, I'm sure you've seen films about Genghis Khan. You've seen films? We'll have to get you one. Very interesting personality. So what happened is that the Mughals invaded Iraq, which was the seat of Muslim culture. And they actually destroyed all the good culture. In Baghdad, they were studying. It was very interesting history. I mean, let's give a little history. In Baghdad, they were studying all the different religions of the world and all the different philosophical systems of the world. In fact, there were Jewish people in Baghdad, there were Hindus in Baghdad, and there was freedom of religion and there was no discrimination against any other religion, which is interesting. Then what happened is these Mughals came from the north. They were not Muslims, but they came and invaded Baghdad and destroyed the city and destroyed basically most of the culture, the good cultural things they had. And then eventually they also became Muslims. But they actually pretty much contaminated the expression of the Muslim, a part of the Muslim religion at that time. And when those Mughals went to India, they killed 80 million Hindus in about 300 years. Pretty bad, isn't it? I mean, it's worse than what happened in World War II with the Nazis. 80 million people killed. And actually, so many more were forced to convert or serve the Muslim government. So what happened was that in the case of Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, who at that time were known as Dabir Khas and Shakara Malik, those were Muslim names, actually. Just like when we take initiation, we get a name, Krishna Das. So they maybe get names in accordance with their service with the government and Muslim names. So anyway, so they were forced to serve the government even though they didn't want to do it. Because the Nawab Hussein Shah, that is the Muslim governor, he threatened to kill the Vaishnavas. And he said, I will kill so many Vaishnavas, and this was in the city or town of Ramakeli, that if you don't come and join me, then I'm going to kill them all. So because of that threat, they agreed to serve the Muslims. And one was actually like the vice secretary, and the other one was like the treasurer or something like that. Very high position. And they made a lot of money. They actually made mountains of gold coins. You know, they were so rich. They had big houses, everything. But they weren't actually interested in that. They were actually interested in Krishna consciousness. But they served the Muslims because of the threat against the villagers. So they lived in a place called Ramakeli, which was the capital of Bengal at that particular time. This was about 1490, approximately 1490. And they were both scholars. They had studied under Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's brother. And that person's name was Vidya Vachaspati. And he taught Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami all the Vedic literatures. So they were absorbed in Krishna Bhakti, the three brothers, Rupa, Sanatana, and Anupama, from their very birth. In fact, they actually established replicas of Vrindavan in the village of Ramakeli. They established replicas of Radhakund, Shyamakund, and the other places, the Jamuna and other places in Krishna's pastimes. Once upon a time, they heard of the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they began to be desirous to see him. And then they had a dream, Sanatana Goswami had a dream. You will soon have darshan of that great Lord, and then you will serve him. So also, when he was young, Sanatana Goswami was young, he had a very unusual dream. A Brahmin came to him in the dream and gave him a Srimad Bhagavatam. And he told Sanatana Goswami to study this. Then the very next day, a Brahmin came in external life, you know, real life, and he gave Sanatana Goswami a Bhagavatam, and he said, take this Bhagavatam, study it, and your life will become perfect. So very interesting, like spiritual experiences they had. From that day on, they began to study the Srimad Bhagavatam and hear more about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was executing his pastimes in Jagannath Puri. And they heard a voice from the sky saying, Lord Chaitanya will soon come here. Don't worry. Don't be in anxiety. You will soon get a chance to meet him. So Lord Chaitanya eventually, in his travels, came to Ramakeli, where they were. And they approached Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is described with straws in their teeth, as a symptom of humility. And they explained to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that we do not know the purpose of life. We are surrendering to you. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you two brothers have been my eternal servants, life after life. And now your names are Rupa and Sanatana. So in other words, he initiated them like that. Normally when we talk about initiation, there's a big fire sacrifice and everybody's going swaha, swaha, swaha. But that's not the essence of initiation. Anyway, someday they'll fix the microphone.
We have to buy a new one.
That's all right. So this is fine like this. The essence of initiation is accepting the spiritual master, and sometimes you'll see a formality and sometimes you won't. Lord Chaitanya even initiated Buddhists without any formality. You know that story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita? The Buddhists tried to make Lord Chaitanya eat untouchable food. They told him it was Mahaprasadam. And a big eagle picked up the plate and dropped it on the head of the head Buddhist, knocked him unconscious. And the other Buddhists, his disciples, said, "What should we do?" And Lord Chaitanya said, "Chant Hare Krishna," and he initiated them right there. And so they started chanting Hare Krishna in the ear of their spiritual master who was unconscious. Coma, it's called. And they initiated their spiritual master. So initiation, you know, sometimes you have different types of initiation. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu initiated both Rupa Sanatan and Anupama, the three of them at that particular time. Anupama was a devotee of Lord Ramchandra rather than a devotee of Krishna, but they're the same. There's no problem. Rupa and Sanatan many times tried to convince him to just worship Krishna, but he was so attached to worshiping Lord Ramchandra, he could not forget. In fact, many of Lord Chaitanya's devotees were like that. Specifically, there was Hanuman who appeared as Murari Gupta in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Okay, so after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed them in some of the intimate, exalted aspects of devotional service, then they decided to leave their governmental service and serve Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fully, 100%. And Rupa Goswami, he was able to leave very, very easily. And he divided his wealth up, and he kept part of his wealth, like a quarter of his wealth, with, at that time they didn't have banks, so they used the grocer, supermarket. A grocer, people sells vegetables. He had some friend. Anyway, he kept a
Sabjiwala,
yeah. I guess you call it Sabjiwala like that. So, so Sanatana Goswami could not escape like that. He tried. Sanatana Goswami did something very interesting. He tried to study the Bhagavatam every day, and he told his boss, the Nawab Hussein Shah, that he was sick. It's just like, sometimes people do it. I used to do that when I was a child. I would take the thermometer and put it in the hot water. So the thermometer would read 100 degrees, you know, dead. Yeah. So I wouldn't have to go to school. So Sanatana Goswami did the same thing, not with the thermometer. But the Nawab, he went there to try to investigate what was happening. And then he discovered Sanatana Goswami was not actually sick, but he was listening to the Srimad Bhagavatam. So then he put Sanatana Goswami in jail at that time. So Sanatana Goswami was able to escape from jail by bribing the warden of the jail. That's the way things work in India. In many other places too. That if you want something, one time I was somewhere and I wanted to get on an airplane, but there was no opening in the airplane. So I put a little money in the ticket and I said, "Now there is an opening." And they gave me an opening. I could fly. So the same thing, it always happens like that in India. So Sanatana Goswami was able to bribe the jailer. And that way, he was able to escape from prison. But he wanted to avoid getting caught, so he went through the backwoods in the mountains. And he had one servant with him. His servant's name was Ishan. Actually, that's a generic name for servant, Ishan. And so Ishan had kept 8 gold coins with him. But Sanatana didn't have anything. But when they got to the hotel, or the motel, like you have hotels here, the hotel owner at that point had an astrologer who could understand, and a palmist, astrologer, who could understand by certain signs that Sanatana Goswami and his servant had a lot of money. So the hotel owner started to be very nice to Sanatana Goswami. Like Chanakya Pandit says, too much devotion is the sign of a thief. So when you find someone who's very nice to you, be careful. Unless they're a great devotee. But otherwise, you should think, what do they want? Do they want to sell me something, steal my money? What do they want? Just like I heard a story about a devotee who just traveled to southern Italy. In southern Italy, there's many mafia people. You know mafia. And so there's even signs on the road. When you enter southern Italy, beware of thieves. So the devotee went, and he stopped to get some petrol. And at the petrol station, one man came up to him and said, I will sell you this very nice CD player, very big. Only 20 euros, beautiful. And so he was so nice, and so hospitable, the devotee bought it. But when he opened up the box later, he found just concrete blocks in it. So when someone is too nice, you got to be very careful. Or if something is too good a deal, if you say, oh, this price is very good, that means you're getting cheated. So what happened is Sanatana Goswami, because he was intelligent, he understood the hotel owner was thinking of something. He wasn't nice just because he was nice. He was nice because he wanted to cheat him. So Sanatana Goswami asked his servant, do you have any money? And his servant Ishan said, yes, I have. He didn't tell the truth. He said, I have 7 gold coins. Actually, because he wanted to keep one for himself. So Sanatana Goswami said to the hotel keeper, he said, here, take these gold coins. And then he sends Ishan back home. And then he crossed the mountains with the help of the hotel keeper, because the hotel keeper felt guilty. He thought, wow, I was going to kill you. I didn't want to kill a saintly person, and now I got your money? Well, it's nice. So he thought, I got your money without killing you. So he was a little reluctant to kill saintly people, but he was happy to get the money. So anyway, they crossed the mountains, and Sanatana Goswami, at that point, met one of his brother-in-law, whose name was Srikant. And Srikant gave him this very nice chadar, nice, beautiful wool, silk chadar. And Sanatana Goswami put it on, because he didn't have much to clothes or anything at that point. So he wore this chadar to keep himself warm. And then he arrived in a city called Benares, where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was. That's Varanasi, same thing. Same thing. So that's where they cremate everybody. Not us. We get cremated generally if we're in Vrindavan or in Bosnia. We get cremated. And they take the ashes to the Ganges, but we don't go to Varanasi. Varanasi is generally Mayavadis. So generally, Vaishnavas don't go there to get cremated. So, but Lord Chaitanya was there, staying at the house of Chandrasekhara. But Sanatana Goswami, because he hadn't, shaved for a long time, or cut his hair, he looked like a Muslim mendicant. So he knocked on the door. He knocked on the door of Chandrasekhar, and Lord Chaitanya said to Chandrasekhar, there's a great devotee at your door. And Chandrasekhar went to the door and he said, there's only a Muslim mendicant here. And Lord Chaitanya said, let him in. And Chandrasekhar said, oh, Muslim mendicant, please come in. Lord Chaitanya wants to see you. So he let him in, and then Lord Chaitanya said, make yourself like clean, normal, clean shaven. And so Sanatana Goswami shaved up. And Lord Chaitanya the next day kept looking at Sanatana Goswami's chadar, because it was such a nice new chadar. He kept looking at it. And Sanatana Goswami understood that he was looking at it because Lord Chaitanya was not pleased with the chadar. Eventually, Sanatana Goswami took the chadar and he went to the shore of the Ganges River and he found a Muslim who had a quilt. You know what a quilt is?
Kilt.
No, not a kilt. A quilt is like a blanket that is formed by many different blankets. You know what it is. You understand? You have so many old pieces of cloth.
Patchwork.
And he said to the poor person there, he said, I'll trade you my new chadar for your old chadar. And so he traded him the chadar. And he came back before Lord Chaitanya with this old chadar with holes in it. And, you know, all different colors. And Lord Chaitanya said, oh, I'm very happy. And he said something very interesting. He said, when one gets rid of leprosy, one doesn't allow one little spot to remain. That's pretty heavy, isn't it? So, because we understand the six Goswamis of Vrindavan exhibited the topmost standard of renunciation. As Lord Chaitanya said to Raghunath Das Goswami, he said, don't eat opulent food, don't wear fine clothes, and don't think of the opposite sex even in dreams, but always meditate on Radha and Krishna within your heart of hearts. That's the instruction for sannyasis. So sannyasi is supposed to be very, very renounced. And in those days, sannyasis didn't wear this sort of cloth. They wore like a little gumsha, a white gumsha that basically went, it was above the knees. Like you see, I don't know if you have a picture of the six Goswamis here, no?
Yes.
You do, a little picture. It's a very little picture. You could see, you can show it. The Gaudiya sannyasis wearing saffron started with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Previously, they were Babaji's, Babaji order of life. But Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur adopted the Ramanuja standard of sannyas in order to preach Krishna consciousness. He studied, he went to South India, especially Srirangam, which is the head of the Ramanuja Sampradaya, and studied the Ramanuja's form of sannyas to actually understand how to preach. Because as we hear from Prabhupada, you know, preaching is the essence, books are the basis, utility is the principle, purity is the force. I think you've all heard that before, right? So, preaching is the essence, right? Utility is the principle, books are the basis, purity is the force. Very, very interesting. So, then, Lord Chaitanya enlightened Sanatana Goswami in the truth of devotional service, sambandha, abhideya, prayojana, understanding our position in relationship to Krishna, who Krishna is, what the material world is, what the avatars of Krishna are, number one, that's sambandha. Abhideya, how to perform devotional service, and prayojana, the ultimate goal of life, going back to home, back to Godhead. So, we see that Sanatana Goswami, being the eldest of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, wrote the books that form the foundation of the teachings of the other Goswamis. Particularly, a book called the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Some of you may have heard about this Brihad Bhagavatamrita. The Brihad Bhagavatamrita has two parts to it. One part is Narada Muni trying to find the best devotee of the Lord. And ultimately he sees, who are the best devotees? Does anyone know? Gopis of Vrindavan, especially Srimati Radharani. And then the other part, you have Gopakumar, a transcendental traveler, a space traveler. This is better than Star Wars. He says, no? Hare Krishna. We should make a movie out of this Brihad Bhagavatam. Anyway, it is better than Star Wars, believe me. At least we know he's not a blind follower. So, so we have Gopa Kumar who's looking for the best place, and he goes through all the planets. He becomes in charge of different planetary systems. Becomes Lord Indra. Previously, he was a king. Then he becomes Lord Indra. Then he becomes Lord Brahma. And then he goes past all the coverings of the material universe into Vishnu Loka. And eventually he reaches Goloka Vrindavan. And then after he reaches Goloka Vrindavan, he's told to come back here to preach. Pretty good, isn't it? Goes back to Godhead, and Radharani says to him in the spiritual world, this is Sanatana Goswami's book. Radharani says to him, I have someone you need to preach to. Get back there.
You have to pass all that path to get there.
And then she sends him back. But then he goes back and forth. He commutes. You know the word commute?
Yeah.
No, commute. Commute means like every day you go to work. You commute to work. So
migrations.
No, migration is different. Commute is like a daily thing. They're like your father commutes to work every day, right? He doesn't migrate to work.
You learn that at school.
You learn about commute.
Yeah, daily migration.
Daily, yeah, it's a daily, but the word migration in English generally means when you're moving to a different country. That's the context. Anyway, I think I know English better than your teacher. So, so anyway, getting back to the point, so he goes back and forth between the material world and spiritual world, and so this story, the two stories in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, form the basis of all the Goswami's literatures. All the truths are contained in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and so very wonderful stories. Everybody can appreciate it, this Brihad Bhagavatamrita. In fact, I gave a course on that at one summer camp several years ago on both parts of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Sanatana Goswami also compiled other books like the Karibhakti Vilas and other commentaries. He was instructed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to also go to Vrindavan along with his brother and establish the places of Krishna's pastimes. Especially, he's known for worshipping the deity known as Madan Mohan. And there's an interesting story about, there's many stories about Madan Mohan. It's a very interesting story. Once upon a time, Sanatana Goswami was performing bhajan in a place called Dwadasadicha. Dwadasadicha in Sanskrit means 12 sons. Like we have the Dwadasi, which comes after the Ekadasi. Everybody's heard of that? Ekadasi means 11. 11 day of the full moon, new moon. So the Dwadasi is the 12th day. So this Dwadasadicha, Aditya means the sun. Dwadasadicha. So the reason this place, this hill, is called Dwadasadicha is that once upon a time, Krishna jumped in the Jamuna to chastise the Kaliya serpent. And after he chastised the Kaliya serpent, I think you all know that story, I hope. You know that. That's better than Star Wars. Oh my God. We have to do some brainwashing later. So after he jumped in the Jamuna to chastise the Kaliya serpent, he got out and he was shivering with cold. And so the sun, he got on this hill and the sun shone with 12 times more the normal brilliance to dry him up. So that's called Dwadasadicha Tila. Tila means hill. So he was on this hill, and he was out begging one day, and he saw this little boy. And this little boy ran to him and said, "Bob, Baba, father," which means father, "Baba, please take me with you. I want to be with you." And Sanatana Goswami said, "No, all I'm eating is just some like dried old bread balls." And the boy said, "I still want to be with you." And Sanatana Goswami, "That's not practical. Go back home, stay with your mother and father. That's where you belong." So that night, Sanatana Goswami had a dream. In the dream, the boy was laughing and laughing at him. And he said, "Baba, my name is Madan Mohan. And tomorrow, you will see me." So, the story goes that this deity was in Mathura, in the house of a Brahmin family, Chobe Brahmin family. Some of you heard this story before. And what happened is that the family didn't know all the rules and regulations for deity worship. So they thought that to worship Krishna, you just like worship him or take care of him just like your son. So the little children were playing with the deity every day. You know, playing football or something like that. And the deity would sit down at the table. Instead of being on an altar, like you see the deities here, so they take the deity. Imagine taking the deity off the altar and see you're eating prasadam and you put the deity here. Okay, here's your plate. Here's my plate. And that's how they were dealing with the deity, with this deity. The deity's name was actually Madan Gopal before he became known as Madan Mohan. So every day, you know, they would play with him. So Sanatana Goswami went and visited this home, and he saw this and he said, "This is not the proper deity worship. He belongs on the altar." That night, Sanatana had another dream, and the deity came to him and he said, Madan Gopal, that time he was called, he said to him, "Why have you spoiled all my fun? You know, I just have to sit on that altar all day long. Before that, I was having fun. You know, I was playing and enjoying." You know, sometimes devotees get a little too strict, too. Like today, I was sitting eating prasadam, and I was talking to everybody at the same time as eating prasadam. And sometimes people say, "Oh, you shouldn't talk." Like that. So, but you know, you have to, what do they say, be a little loose sometimes. If you're always just like, what is it? What's the word? Chub?
Chill out.
Chill out, yeah. Is that Bosnian? I know it's English. So if you're always like that, it's no fun. So if the deity is always on the altar, of course, I'm not saying that you should take the deity off the altar. Start dancing around with him during kirtan. Devotees used to do that, you know. In the movement, when they first had Lord Jagannath on the altar, they would take him out with them and dance around with them. And when they first discovered Lord Jagannath in the movement, actually this is an interesting story. Lord Jagannath first came to the devotees. They found the little deities of Lord Jagannath in an import store. And there's an interesting story. The devotee who found him stole him. It's called a two-finger discount. You know, anyway, we don't steal. Devotees should not steal. Devotees should be honest. So he stole the deity. She stole the deity. Her name was Malati. And she put the deity before. She said, "Prabhupada, who is this?" And Prabhupada offered obeisances and said, "Jagannath Swami has now come." And he said, "Are there any other deities like this?" And she said, "Yes, there's a whole barrel." So they bought the whole barrel of Didi's, Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra. And the devotees would wear them around their necks in little pouches. You know, a little pouch like that, and the little Didi would be looking at them. So in the beginning days, like devotees, they did not know too much about awe and reverence. And sometimes they did very strange things because they hadn't understood Prabhupada exactly. Like one time Prabhupada made the comment that a little alcohol helps you digest food. So many devotees started carrying around what's called a hip flask. You understand what it? You know what a hip flask is?
Yeah. I was just saying, it doesn't take a lot to...
What's that?
Yeah,
like that. They carry around that. And they put a little bit there for prasadam because they were taking it. And Prabhupada stopped that. Another time, Prabhupada drank a drink called 7-Up. And Prabhupada says, very refreshing. And then a few days later, a whole big truck delivered to the temple. So we have to be careful. We're meant to worship Krishna and on reverence. Don't take him off the altar. But this family in Mathura, they were actually on a higher platform of devotional service. So after Sanatana Goswami had that dream where Madan Gopal said to him, you ruined all my fun. Then Madan Gopal said to him, now you have to take care of me. And so the Brahmin, he also had a dream. Madan Gopal appeared before him and says, bring me to Sanatana Goswami. So he brought him to Sanatana Goswami, and Sanatana Goswami said, I can't take care of deities here. All I have is just a hut. And I'm just eating dried bread balls. In other words, he didn't have any stove, so all he did was roll some dough into a ball and put it in the sun. And no salt, no butter. And that's it. And, you know, it's dried stuff like that. Very austere. Yeah. So then, Didi said, all right, I'll stay anyway. So that after a while, he kept the Didi hanging in the tree. Because he didn't even have an altar or anything. Not even a bhajan kutir. So then after a while, the Didi asked Sanatana Goswami, can I have some salt? And Sanatana Goswami said, I've been given this instruction by Lord Chaitanya to write books and, you know, chant Hare Krishna. I don't have time. So you're asking me for salt, and tomorrow you're going to be asking me for butter. So you're just going to have to get it yourself. So don't try that with the deities. But what happened is that the deity did make an arrangement to get his own salt. There was a boat full of salt on its way to Mathura, and it got caught on what's called the sandbank in the Jamuna River. You know what a sandbank is? That's not where they keep money or anything like that. That means a high spot in the river, and he couldn't move. We say it ran aground. And so this wealthy man who was owning the boat went to Sanatana Goswami, because the hill was right above that, this hill, Dwadasadicha Hill. And he said to Sanatana Goswami that, please, Swamiji, please help me. And Sanatana Goswami said, I can't help you. Just go ask him, the deity. So he went to... Yeah, what can I do? I'm just a poor sannyasi. So he went to the deity and he said to the deity, please help. And then a few minutes later, a big storm was there. It's like we had today, a little bit of rain. And the boat rose. And then he gave the profit from that sale of salt to build what's called the Madan Mohan Temple. The Madan Mohan Temple is one of the first temples you see when you're doing a parikrama of Vrindavan. But the original deity is not there. The original deity is in a place called Karoli. Because the Mughal invaders came. Remember how I mentioned the Mughals? They're different than ordinary Muslims. The Mughals came and they were breaking all the deities in India.
They killed 80 million.
80 million. 80 million Hindus. But also they went into the temples and smashed the deities. Even on the outside of the temples, where you had these wonderful carvings of Krishna's pastimes, they smashed the faces, the noses and the mouths and the eyes of the carvings all over India. This is very, very bad. Anyway, so this deity was later on moved to Karoli. So that's how the Madan Mohan Temple became established. So Sanatan Goswami remained in Vrindavan and instructed Raghunath Das Goswami and the other Goswamis in Krishna consciousness. But he's most renowned as the Sambandha Acharya. Sambandha means to establish the truths or Siddhanta of Krishna consciousness. So there's a little bit of the story of Sanatan Goswami. If I remember any other stories. No, not right now. So anyone have any questions? Yes. Okay.
Well, this is not related with the lecture, but you know when they say Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami, that's Prabhupada. You know?
Yes.
And why is he a Swami? He was married.
Why was he a Swami?
I mean, why do they call him Swami?
Okay, let's talk about Swami for a second. The two, it's very interesting. The term Swami and the term Swami and the term Maharaj are not traditional terms for sannyasis. Actually, let's go back a little. In household life, the wife would sometimes call the husband Swami. Did you know that? You know what Swami means?
Yes.
Master. So the wife would say to the husband, Master. Of course, now we're in the modern age. The husband says to the wife, Swami Ni. It's a little bit different. I mean, it's reversed. But the... But that was the tradition. And then also as far as the word Maharaj, that was a Kshatriya term, traditionally. Because Raj means passion, and Maha means great, big. So you have big passion. So you don't want a sannyasi to have a lot of passion. However, these terms were adapted for the purposes of preaching. And a sannyasi is definitely a swami, a real sannyasi, because he controls the senses. So you have the two titles for sannyasi, named Swami and Goswami. And Srila Prabhupada was first married, but then he took vanaprastha life. And that was because, the reason he took vanaprastha life was because his wife was not cooperating with his Krishna consciousness.
Oh, she was drinking tea.
Not only drinking tea, but she sold his Bhagavatam for tea biscuits. When people would come over the house, she would take something called a feather duster. You know what a feather duster is? No, you don't know. That's before they had vacuum cleaners. Everybody knows what a vacuum cleaner is? It's a duster with feathers at the end. My mother had one when I was young.
My dad has some.
Yeah. So she would be using it to clean the house, and Srila Prabhupada would be preaching, and she would blow the dust in the face of his guests. Just go like that. And then at one point Prabhupada said to her, "Do you want tea or do you want me?" And she said, "Tea." And Prabhupada said, "Bye bye, ciao." Auf Wiedersehen. Hasta luego. Arrivederci. What? Arrivederci. So Prabhupada said, and he went, and he never came back. So, the point is that Prabhupada was already older. He had taken care of all of his responsibilities. And his wife was opposed to Krishna consciousness.
Consider her to be his wife.
No, he did. But it's in the varnashram system, at a certain age, if the wife is inimical to Krishna consciousness, that means against Krishna consciousness, then after the person has done his responsibilities, he can head for the hills.
Hit the road
and preach Krishna. That's called vanaprastha. You know what vanaprastha means?
Yeah. You first go through brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyasa.
But what does the word mean, vanaprastha?
Celibate.
Now, vana means what?
Forest.
Prastha means to go. So when a person would traditionally take vanaprastha, he would wear clothes made of tree bark. And he would only eat food that was cooked in the sun. That's one of the rules and regulations of vanaprastha. The sun. Cooked in the sun. But Prabhupada preached Krishna consciousness. And then Prabhupada took sannyas from his godbrother Keshava Maharaj. And then he came to the West. But the point about Srila Prabhupada is that he was the only one of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples who followed the order to preach in the Western world. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is the spiritual master of Srila Prabhupada, gave that order to practically all of his disciples who could speak English. And Prabhupada was the only one who took that order seriously and did it. What?
Yes, before 20 years before he went to America, he said, hey, you could preach and go to the West. And he said, yes, but he was trying all those 20 years to do that.
Yes.
And the 20th year, he finally did it.
He finally did it. And how much money did he have in his pocket when he came? 40 rupees, which is nothing because you can't change them. So that's Srila Prabhupada.
That's $0.01.
That's amazing. So any other questions about Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami, the sixth Goswami? What's that?
Why was the deity first called Madan Gopal and then it became Madan Mohan?
That's an interesting question. Of course, Gopal means the coward boy. And Mohan, the name was changed because Sanatan Goswami is the Sambandha Acharya. So Madan Mohan means what? Does anyone know what Madan Mohan means? Cupid, the one who enchants, the mind and Cupid. Like Madan, who is Madan?
Who takes away lust?
Madan is Cupid. Does anyone know who Cupid is?
Yeah, the little baby with eight wings.
Do you have Valentine's Day here?
Yes.
Do you celebrate it?
Yes.
You send cards to anybody on Valentine's Day?
No, I don't send a card, but I buy a gift.
Oh, you buy gifts? Yeah. Starting early in life. So, Cupid, I'll tell you a little bit about Cupid. He's called Ananga. Why is he called Ananga? That means he has no, because he's invisible. Because Lord Shiva burnt him, his gross body, to ashes. So you can't see him. And he fires the arrows of form into your heart, but form, taste, smell, and touch, all the objects of the senses. And when you're not looking, boom! When you're not looking, you fall in love. And it's even medically, it's been understood that when one falls in love, the brain scan is the same as when one takes cocaine. So that's Madan. So Madan Mohan is the attractor of Cupid. But who attracts the attractor of Cupid? And what's her name? Mohini.
That's,
yeah, Mohini. So the attractor of the attractor of Cupid. So the point is that Sanatana Goswami, being the Sambandha Acharya, is the one who's in charge of Sambandha, means to basically attract your mind away from matter to spirit. And therefore, Rupa Goswami's deities are called what? Radha? No, Rupa Goswami. Radha Govinda, which means, Govinda means the pleaser of the senses, he who engages your senses in Krishna consciousness. So those are the Abhideya deities. And the Prayojana deities are which deities? Gopinath. Radha Gopinath, the Lord of the Gopis. So you see, the deities, the name of the deities, is very much connected with the acharya, or with the teaching of a certain aspect of devotional service. Acharya of Gopinath, well, the person who installed Gopinath is Madhu Pandit, but the acharya, this is different, because the acharya of Prayojana is Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami is the acharya of the topmost platform of devotional service. And then you have Rupa Goswami, who's the acharya of Abhideya, and Sanatana Goswami of Sambandha. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So, any other questions? About anything else? Yeah.
Recently, I listened in your lecture that there are different stages of sannyasa, bahudaka, kutichaka, etc., and that they are different according to the attachment to food. And the first one is still attached to his wife's food, but his son can only bring it to the end of the village, etc.
Yes.
So how can a sannyasi, at the first stage, be still attached to the wife's food when there was a manifesta phase where there has to be some kind of detachment? How can he be attached for, let's say, for the sake of example, for 25 years ago, attachment?
25 years ago?
If there was a manifesta stage between sannyasi and...
Because in vanaprastha, he's still eating food cooked at home.
At home.
At home, yeah. But the point is that we don't actually follow that whole gradual system of sannyas. But the point is that initially, it was very hard for people to, it still is, to extricate themselves from the comfortable situation. So it had to be done gradually. You can't all of a sudden take someone who's used to eating opulent food. You know, let's say every day you're eating pizza and lasagna. You don't like lasagna.
Pasta.
Polenta.
Fries.
What else?
Chocolate.
And all of a sudden you have to follow my diet. You would die. You would die. It's too shocking. So you have to do it. You have to do it gradually. Step by step. Renunciation has to be gradual.
Like one day I could chocolate, second day pizza.
Like if I said to you right now, tomorrow you're a sannyasi and all you can do is raw food, and you can't go back home.
Today I would eat lots of pizza, chocolate, so I could say goodbye.
No. Tomorrow you would be traveling with me. And you'd be calling your mother up to send you some nice food. Say, Mommy, I'm hungry. So, renunciation has to be instituted gradually.
But Prabhupada, you just confused me. You said that in vanaprastha stage, one still eats at home.
Of course.
What then with vanaprastha going to forest?
With his wife.
Oh. So she cooks it.
Yeah, she's still cooking.
So my wife wanted to take vanaprastha, but that doesn't mean leaving me. No comments.
Don't worry about it. In this day and age, let me just be more specific. The preferable form of renunciation is called Kshetra Sannyas, where the husband and wife stay together and serve Krishna. That's mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur only took the renounced order of life when he was getting ready to leave this world. Otherwise, he was a perfect example of householder. This is what we want in our movement. Like many times when Lord Chaitanya was touring South India, people wanted to follow him. And every time, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Don't talk like that, go back home. Stane stata shruti katam tan van manobir. Stay where you are and chant the holy names. And yari deka tari kara krishna padesha marayai guru hoi tore desh. Preach to people, become guru of your village. Make people Krishna conscious." Because in Kali Yuga, people appreciate, at least in the Western world, people appreciate much more if someone's married. I mean, just practically, if you go in the public and say, "So-and-so is not married," they'll think, "He's weird." In the Western world?
Yeah.
Because they've had so much bad experience with priests. Mm-hmm. Right? So the common conception is, "What's wrong with you?" So there's not that standard of renunciation. So people, and preaching, if you really want to make devotees, preaching means cultivating on a personal basis people. And the grahastha is very well equipped to do that. You know, inviting people to your home. Like Srila Prabhupada said, one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada about grahastha life. And the devotee was basically wanted to ask a question about the intimate association between men and women. That was the devotee's intention. But Prabhupada answered in a different way. He said, the duty of grahasthas is that before you eat, you cry out, you know, go outside. And you say, "If anyone's hungry, please let them come and eat." Three times. And you invite people. And the point is, it's not that you have to do that here. Not that you have to build a minaret on top of your on top of your house. Prasadam, prasadam, like that. Not that you have to do that, but to invite people to your home. Because people join religious societies not because of philosophy so much in Kali Yuga, but because of friendship, social networking. So the grahastha is in a great position to cultivate people. You know, sannyasi can come and give a little class and then he disappears. Well, you could stay on the internet. You could see him by Skype. So, Facebook too, sorry. But the grahastha is in a great position to preach. So if one has a Krishna conscious home, one should not leave that home. Preach. And take care and raise your children in a Krishna conscious way. Yes. Yeah, the children should be the first priority for the grahastha. it's a paid advertisement from Orion. But anyway.
He's still forced.
No, he has some things you have to be forced to do, like go to school and everything. Prabhupada was forced to go to school too.
Yes, I know. He was hiding in the bed.
Prabhupada didn't want it. His mother had to pay someone to drag him to school.
Gorango.
Yeah. Yeah. So any other questions? Yes.
Can I ask something? It's related to Srila Prabhupada. I just ask Srila Chandravalu Maharaj. For initiation from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur,
yeah.
Is it like for the for vow was chanting of 64 rounds? Or?
Yeah, I'll answer that question. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't make his disciples take a vow, but his instructions were to chant 64 rounds a day unless you're preaching. No, thank you. For those who were preaching, he did allow them to chant less rounds a day. But those who were in the moth all day long, they had to chant 64 rounds a day. So it wasn't precisely a vow, it was an instruction. Prabhupada originally wanted to instruct us to chant 64 rounds, but he reduced it to 16. However, in our sampradaya, 64 is the standard. And what I usually do at the time of initiation is I tell the devotees, not as an order, but as a request, whenever possible on Ekadasi, to chant 64 rounds. And if you chant 64 rounds one day, you know, a few times, you'll find your whole life changing. It really changes everything. And then you'll understand that 16 rounds is just the warm-up. Just like you have your games like soccer or something like that, before the game you warm up, right? But the actual game occurs after the warm-up. So 16 rounds is the warm-up, but the actual amount, you know, if we didn't have all this other service and everything to do, the actual amount that we should be chanting is 64. And it's not that difficult to chant 64 rounds. I'll explain how. First of all, you get up early in the morning. If you start chanting your rounds at 9 o'clock in the morning, it's very difficult. I'll rise at about 3 or so in the morning, and then usually before Mangal Arati, I have 16 done. Then by the time of class, I'll have another 16 done. That's 32. And then, very easy. Or what, I have another trick to chant 64 rounds. I tell the devotee to take me in his car and drop me off 24 kilometers away from the temple. And not to pick me up. You understand? And then I have to walk back chanting Hare Krishna. So that's a trick. Many times I've had the whole temple dropped off 24 kilometers away from the temple. Most of the devotees. And they were all walking back, and the devotees are going, oh, I can't do this. I said, just continue. But they're happy when they come back and they've chanted 64 rounds.
It's about Govardhan Parikrama.
Yeah, it's like a Govardhan Parikrama. It's very nice. I mean, they drink a little water, it's a hot day or something like that. Take a little rest, you know, halfway through. But that's a way to get yourself to chant, you know, if you don't want to sit in the same room for 8 hours, which is more difficult. But you'll find a complete change in your consciousness when you chant 64 rounds. Or you can go to one of the japa retreats. And they have a 64-round day or two. If you don't find enough determination to do it yourself, then you have to go to a japa retreat. But either anyway is good. But I'd like to do that on Ekadasi. If I don't have other things to do, if I'm not giving a seminar, if I'm not doing my GBC service, then I'll chant 64 rounds. How's that sound? Yeah.
Question related to this. Suppose that like Guru or GBC, you get these kind of questions, how to person who lost the taste for the holy name, how to again to get this taste.
Okay, that's a good question. If you've lost the taste for the holy name, the question is, why have you lost the taste for the holy name? It's usually because of offenses. And you have to figure out what sort of offenses you've been making. If it's offenses against a Vaishnava, you have to go before that Vaishnava and beg for forgiveness to regain your taste for the chanting of the holy name. That's what I generally see. Or if it's offense against the deities, then do some extra service for the deities, rectify yourself. If it's Dham Aparada, you know, offense against the holy Dham. But the most serious offense is offense against Vaishnavas. So that's, otherwise, Otherwise, you don't lose a taste for chanting. I mean, you could by bad association. But even so, the holy name will attract you. I mean, I've seen people who are just like meat eaters attracted by the holy name because they haven't committed offenses. That's why when we join the movement, we have such a high taste. And then after a while, the taste may diminish. Because before we joined the movement, we haven't committed offenses against any Vaishnavas. Because we didn't know any Vaishnavas to commit offenses against. And after we joined the movement, we met a few Vaishnavas and we've committed offenses against them. So you have to be very careful with Vaishnavas. That doesn't mean don't join the movement. And then you'll chant better japa. I mean, some people are thinking like that. But be very careful. I mean, a Vaishnava is very dear to Krishna. Krishna says, he who says he is my devotee is not my devotee. He who says he is a devotee of my devotee is my devotee. So you're dealing with someone who's very dear. It's like a child. If I go to someone's child and say, how ugly your child is. I've never tried that before. But I'm sure it's quite dangerous.
Don't do that at all.
One time I made a mistake. Not the same mistake. I actually told a man how old his wife looked. What happened is that a man brought his wife to the temple one time. And I thought that she was his mother. And I said to them, my dear so-and-so Das, it's so nice you brought your mother to the temple. And he said, Maharaj, this is my wife. I said, I'll see you later. So if you insult someone who's very dear to someone else, then you're in trouble. Does everyone understand that? So with Vaishnavas, it's like that.
Maharaj, if there's some kind of advice, because relationship between devotees are really subtle and if we do some mistakes, but we are not aware of it. How to...
Then we should serve the Vaishnavas. See, sometimes you take one of the injunctions as a negative, but I'd rather take it as a positive. The negative is don't offend Vaishnavas. The positive is serve Vaishnavas. If you serve Vaishnavas, then you'll be freed from your offenses. Like that story of Devananda Pandit. Devananda Pandit offended Srivas Thakur. Srivas Thakur went to his Bhagavatam class. Srivas Thakur started rolling on the ground in ecstasy. And Devananda Pandit's disciples threw him out of Bhagavatam class, thinking he was just like creating problems. And so Devananda Pandit lost his ability to understand Bhagavatam, so much so that when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was walking by his class, he said, this guy will never understand Bhagavatam. But then later on, Devananda Pandit served Vrikeshwara Pandit. Vrikeshwara Pandit was the devotee who danced like for 72 hours without stopping, one of Lord Chaitanya's devotees. And he protected him from the crowd. And because of that, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu later on forgave and said, also you should go to Srivas Thakur and beg forgiveness. But it was because of service to Vaishnavas. We should be ready to serve all the other Vaishnavas. I mean, service is actually much more pleasurable than being served. I was at one temple recently where the standard for the Sunday feast was the devotees would eat first and the guests would eat second. I've seen that before. It's horrible standard. Horrible standard. So I said, that's not going to happen. I'm going to organize the service and I'm going to serve. And so all the devotees were thinking, damn it. You know, they were actually very upset with me. But anyway. So what happened is that I put all the guests, there were actually about 400 guests. It's a big temple. It's a big, very big temple. And I served first, and I was serving the Mahaprasadam to everybody. And I noticed sometimes when the devotees were serving, they were just taking the spoon and going, you know, throwing the food on everyone's plate, like that. But then I was going around and saying, Hare Krishna, here's Mahaprasadam for you, and smiling at the people. And it was so pleasurable. It was much more fun than eating myself. So it's a lot of fun to serve. If you get into the loving mood, like Prabhupada talked about, repeating Rupa Goswami's instruction in the Upadeshamrita, Dadati Pratigranati Guyamakyati Prichati Bhunte Bhojate Chaiva, the six loving exchanges. You know, giving prasadam. Of course, it's also accepting prasadam, but giving prasadam, giving gifts. So if we get into this, we get the mercy of Vaishnavas, we can get a taste again for chanting. That's the secret. Even if we, by accident, committed some offense or did some problem, then just go ahead and serve the Vaishnavas, even if you don't know which offense you committed. There's no harm in serving the Vaishnavas. Okay? Any other questions? I think it's getting late. So, if not tomorrow morning, we're having Bhagavatam class, what time?
7:45. 7:15 we start with the Darshan.
The class is 7:45?
Yeah.
7:45, okay. So we'll be here at 7:45. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to the Prabhupada. To the Prabhupada. To the Prabhupada. Ki Jai.